think there is going to be 7 minutes, and if there are going to be a 7 minutes that are posted on the weekly prior to the final version, it would probably be helpful for them to just say draft.
Okay. Draft minutes. All right, so let's move on to, actually, before we move on, comments on, sorry, almost forgot what we were doing right before this, is comments on the minutes from this week. Now I don't have a chance to look. So Allison's feedback's a little more detailed.
Colin, yeah. my comment is that, particularly from a governmental point of view and a corporate point of view, minutes are sort of basic. And most organizations try not to have them too lengthy, but just kind of highlight what happened. I think this type of operation is the exact opposite, and that we ought to have as much in the minutes as possible and not worry too much about precision. Because I found out going over these that obviously because this moves fast and a lot of people come in with different ideas, you can't get it all at a meeting. And that's why the minutes are so useful. When you look at the minutes and it kind of collects everything and you kind of say, oh yes, I missed that. So I think we should keep them as detailed as we can.
So, who's the official minute taker for this meeting, then? Is it Amy? Or?
Yeah, I'm taking notes. Minutes.
I was not aware of that, so I was taking notes. I wouldn't want to do that, but I don't see any harm in two people taking notes. I know that sometimes the conversation gets robust and it's hard to capture everything.
Well, I think to some degree we all sort of take notes in some way. So, but I had heard John earlier offer up that minute. I like the idea of it sort of passing around because it's a collaborative effort thing.
And I'm doing the audio. And I'll give it to you afterwards.
Yeah. No one's going to forget this meeting.
And the reason why I was prepared to take minutes was simply that when Scope agreed to take over responsibility for facilitation, Scope staff had prior been involved in taking the minutes. And so therefore I just went forward with that understanding. But I'm happy to share that responsibility.
Good. All right. So we're taking detailed minutes. So, approval of October minutes.
Motion
to approve as is or as suggested corrections or approve all suggested corrections. I guess it's a little more complicated than
I'm just talking about these here where it has, you know, minutes and then Allison's feedback in here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I say we move to approve the minutes.
Okay. I would just make a comment that on page 2, where in the last paragraph, where it's referencing Mike's expression of his concern related to health department data, I do recall a specific discussion where it was discussed that the survey technology, the survey techniques used to gather certain health information data would not allow the data to be broken down into a smaller increment. I do recall that conversation. It wasn't simply his opinion, it was a discussion about the fact that certain survey instruments would not, at this point in time, allow for going back into that data and reshuffling a smaller geographic area from as a result of the survey technique that was used.
So that's the American Community Survey is data that's only a sample. It's not like the census. The census is everybody, but it's only every 10 years. The American Community Survey is like rolling estimates, but it's only a portion. So that's the data that can only be, the smallest geography is the census block group or the census tract, depending on. But the data that the health department has committed to this, to the platform, is U.S., it's data that's gathered on everybody. So that's a different kind of data. The data that Michael has been pursuing is birth data, healthy birth data, data about the number, and then converting it to the percentage of disease, I mean, of immunization preventable diseases, and then heart disease. So that's a different kind of data. So that's, I think that the comment here that when Kari was speaking, that the CHIP data, that's survey data too. So survey data is different. What the health department has committed is not survey data. So I think that, you know, that's the issue that Michael has been expressing ongoing is he wants to see, and this is I think why you know, why Trevor did this analysis by census block group and by neighborhood, so you can see the number of people in those two geographies, those two kinds of geographies, in order to see if they're similar. Because Michael was under the impression that the geography of many of the neighborhoods would be so small that it would be something much smaller than block groups. So that's what was going on in that conversation.
But it's also true that he emphasized that there was some information that could not be unwound down to that level. Correct? I mean, wasn't that the conversation?
Well, what was it? It was more that he and his organization weren't comfortable with break, because they have it by the address, so we could get it to the parcel level if we wanted, but he doesn't want to go smaller than what census.
Block group.
Was it block group, or
yeah,
was it even
block group?
Okay, yeah.
And which is really why that data you put together was how do the block groups match up with
compare,
the neighborhoods?
Just compare size-wise, yeah, and population size.
Yeah,
so the survey data Kari was talking about really is consistent with what you're saying, John, that what Michael was really plugged into was how Trevor described it. There's a disinclination to go smaller than the block group.
But it also depends not just on the population size in the block group, but also that numerator, the number of events per block group is also important. So the health department isn't going to want to share data when there's only one or two events per group.
Sure, there's a threat. There could be a threshold established that if it were that, as you're describing, then it gets sort of blurred out. But notwithstanding that, if the number, the numerator and the denominator are sufficient, it could go down to a level less than the block group.
And you're just more likely to reach that threshold the smaller the
geography. Absolutely,
yeah.
That discussion will take place later on in the meeting. For the purposes of approving these minutes right now, so I can get
to the rest. I just want to ask the person who took the notes, I just want to raise one more question for the group. It's just a question, and that is on the third page, second to the last paragraph, quality of life indicators under that head, which was simply the quadrants that we were using. Colleen reported on Scope's recent presentations to the councils and commissions of each municipality and the county commission. These presentations by Tim and Allison reported on the quality of life indicators were of the community data collaborative over the course of 2012 was the edit that Allison is suggesting. Well, was the presentation on the collaborative's work, or was the presentation on the body of work that Scope did during that course of the year for the county?
It was broader than the quality of life indicators.
Okay.
So that was just one quadrant, and in fact the presentations were about all quadrants, so it was about the work in all domains, and the community data collaborative is actually larger than any one portion. So there was presentation on the Data 2.0 workshops, there was presentation on the data that generated, there was presentation on the development of the collaborative itself, and then the platform. So it was in all domains.
So it's, so by this though, the quality of life has been struck through on these notes, and as if it was just the work of the data collaborative, but it wasn't just the work of the data collaborative, it was the body of work that Scope conducted as part of its contract with the county for 2012.
So the graphic, if you recall, that we use, so So quality of life is one aspect, but in fact, it was about all of it. And the scope data initiative, while I was directing it, was in fact this. It was about developing all of this. So that's why it seems to me like it's broader to say it was about all of this than to say it was only about the 1 o'clock.
In fact, this slide was one of the presentation slides.
I'm just, again, I raised the question because...
So what you're saying is it's the community data initiative, not the community data collaborative work? Is that what you're getting at?
I'm trying to get to, yes, the specificity of what actually those presentations were. And it was my understanding that they were the satisfaction of the completion of the work the scope did under county contract during 2012.
They're on the Weebly, so all the presentations are up there.
Right.
But what you'll see if you check them out is that they really were about all of it. They weren't only specific to, I mean, the presentations themselves were about the full body of work.
So would it be reasonable to say, I think what I'm hearing is that it was both about the scope's quality of life indicators and the community data collaborative work that you presented about both, didn't you? I mean,
that's true, but it's one of the four. It's one of the four quadrants is the quality of life indicators. It was about the whole pie.
I see.
All right. So what do we want the minutes to reflect right now?
I got it.
And then we can move on. Because in the future, probably all of this conversation will take place online instead of at the collaborative meeting. Mm-hmm. We don't want to waste our valuable time together discussing little details. But
I would then ask the question of process, because it would seem that to say that we're accepting the minutes as revised, admittedly, because it was not provided in the Word format, it wasn't possible to do track changes and make it clear. There are a lot of arrows here. Are we just going to put this up online as it is, or does someone want to...
Well, somebody must still have the Word doc, right? It's not
absolutely.
Just a PDF.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think it would just be...
Okay, I wasn't clear in my question. So if we do that, then we want to send that out again to make sure that that's what the intent was? Because again, it's conversion of handwritten notes with arrows to type document, so.
If it's hard to follow, because I know that it's probably easier for the person who made all the arrows, if you send it to me, I'm happy to just send it with track changes so you can see how they correspond. Or if you want to just do it, if you have any questions, just call me or just email me and say, is this what you meant? But
I'm not being clear in my questioning. So would that then go back out to the group for a look-see?
One more comment.
Or, are we accepting?
No.
Accept it how it is.
Take it as it is.
I would say that because we're learning and growing, let's put this as part of our learning curve so that we're not focusing just on this and just say, go with Jason's motion to approve with the changes and just leave that one as is. And then our next one's going to show that we learned from it and it's going to be better.
So post this on the Weebly.
I would second Jason's motion to approve as is, as it stands with the changes.
Is there going to
without changing those.
Is there going to be a next one? I thought the vote was for not to do it this way again.
There's going to be minutes on the next one and an audio.
Right, so
which
you're
will
not going to have to go through this summary.
Right. Correct.
So this is the final one, right?
So I would say just accept this one as is, put it up the way it is, and move on.
All right.
Okay, so you got a second.
So I'm seconding that motion.
Okay.
who made Trevor. The motion, Jason or Trevor?
Excellent.
Jason,
oh, it was Jason.
Made it.
That's right.
Let's move on to platform technologies.
Did we approve it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Motion approved. Let the minutes reflect. All right. So the Urban Institute contract. Tim had raised this point in an email yesterday that the Data Collaborative has not seen the contract yet. I have posted it to the Weebly website, so everyone can now take a look at the contract as it stands. It seems like we're at the final, in the final stretch here. Once that gets signed, we can really start moving forward with the work.
Well, so the contract's not being signed?
No, not yet.
Okay.
It's been, it was signed by our board chair, but it has not yet been signed by the Marine Washington.
By the Urban Institute. Okay. Is that
or our board chair, scope board chair.
Is there, is that because there's some hiccup that they're looking at, or do we know?
No,
it's in transition. Or
you might have missed an email first thing this morning, so I can go grab my email and see. We may have a signed contract.
But that, yeah.
Grab it.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was just about signed last time we met, so that it's not, if it's signed, it's signed. So.
I believe it is.
Okay.
Right.
And that could be wrong.
The contract is signed. Yes.
For the minutes. I could be wrong. But I believe it's been signed.
Are you raising your finger?
Nope. I'm just sitting here.
Yeah. All right. We had a little conference call with the Urban Institute earlier this week, and they had, we had a discussion last meeting about having a tutorial for the whole collaborative to learn how to upload data sets, our own data sets, into the platform. We've set a date with them for that tutorial in mid-January. So it's going to be January 16th, which is a Wednesday, at 9:30 or 10 o'clock. I forget which one, but I'll send that out. So you have a few weeks, about 6 weeks actually, before that. You guys all want to be there, put that on your calendar. My suggestion would be that is a serves as a data collaborative meeting for January. So it would reflect the same Wednesday meeting in the morning, if that works for everyone.
Do you have a date for it?
The 16th, so mid-January. Another sort of housekeeping question we might talk about is, is there interest at this point in having a meeting at the end of December during the holidays? Because the way that our schedule's been working, it would be that last week in December. I see a lot of
people are gone.
People
yeah,
shaking their
heads.
We're closed. Yeah. So if we decide to meet January, and that's our next meeting, that would be 6 weeks from now. We wouldn't quite be missing an entire month, but it would give everybody a chance to come back from the holidays and get back in data collaborative mindset.
And I assume that training is going to take place in a...
Well, that's also something we can decide. I know we've talked in the past about meeting down in Northport to kind of have more of a geographical spread. And I know Neva's offered that up before too. So I know you guys have Wi-Fi and everything.
For this meeting, what kind of
technology
we'll need a conference call type of setup. As long as we have a phone where we can have it on speakerphone, and Tom and whoever else can talk to everybody and talk us through what they're doing on the screen. We'll need computer Wi-Fi setup, so it will be more of a webinar type.
Does the county have a training room that we could use?
We've got state time.
We've got several.
The think tank.
Yeah. Have to make sure it's available.
Yeah.
Right.
Does it have computers at every station out there?
You said 9:30.
Well, there's 10.
Yeah.
10
and
4.
And
I'm
pretty sure 8.
Yeah. And then the think tank has
20.
16 or
20. It's got about 20.
Yeah. Yeah.
The health department.
It'll know when it's on that. Right.
Okay. So, someone from the county able to check on availability for that space?
We can, yeah.
That would be great.
Which one do we want?
Well, the think tank would be better.
Well, do we want downtown or out east or where else?
I would just start with the think tank, because it'll hold everybody where you have to do it in 8 hours at the bottom.
Yep.
You can, but it's a small room. So the think tank is at downtown?
Yes.
I think Trevor might mention that one time.
Yes.
That's
the think tank.
Okay. Yeah.
Great.
Here are the signatures on the contract with Urban Institute.
Okay, so I'll post the sign once on the website, and then we'll be back. All right. So we're moving forward. In last meeting we had discussed adding, instead of the meetings reflect this as well, instead of duplicating our work, because we want to have annotations and explanations for some of the data sets, like what they are and what they stand for on the platform eventually, to add another column or two to that spreadsheet that's already been created. I've done that, it's on the Weebly website. I think the expectation that we had discussed last time was that people who were the source or provider of that data would be the ones who are providing that explanation or annotation to the document, correct? One thing we might set a deadline for when we want all of that to be done.
Just for clarification, since I wasn't at the last meeting,
yes.
You're meaning annotation as in information about metadata?
Like metadata.
Yes.
Okay, you're not meaning labels that are turned into annotation.
Explanation of, like a data dictionary kind of thing.
Yeah. So even if I think what we had talked about was on the platform, if you didn't know like what FCAT stands for, as you scroll over it, like a little window pops up that explains what that is. And the idea was that everybody as a collaborative would approve those annotations before we send them along to the Urban Institute. So that's up there.
Do you have something here from school data that I need to go through to
yes.
do those acronyms?
Yes, probably so. If you would take a look at that, or everyone would take a look at that, and if there's questions, you know, you can send your questions out to the whole list, and people can respond.
There was also a discussion, I remember, about like, originators of data and source of the data?
Yes. Those columns have also been added.
Okay, so those, you know, so you can clarify that in the metadata.
Yeah.
You
know, so
who's
like,
providing it and then where they got it from.
Yeah, like the county has provided us with a lot of these data sets, but you guys aren't necessarily the originator of those data sets.
So,
we've got the think tank on January 16th from 9 to noon.
Excellent. Thanks,
thank you. So, Colleen, you added fields for the source, for the owner and the source?
The root source, I think.
Okay.
The provider. And then provider contact information. So if someone has questions, they could get in touch with that person. And then there's the column for explanations.
Okay. And that's where we'll put the descriptions.
Yes. Does that sound okay to everyone?
This is probably a good point for me to raise what I was thinking about when you were talking about the limitation on the use of the base information itself. Not the data that's posted, but the database underneath it. Because that's what you were really talking about in terms of census tract data. The person who posts the data should indicate in an annotation or wherever you've got the space that this data is restricted or unrestricted or in some way or another indicate whether there's more available there than what you're looking at or not. So if you have block grant data and it can't be broken down further, then there's a notation that this is as far as we can go. You can ask somebody to look into it who's in charge of the database, and they might be able to tell you more. But basically, that's a good place to put the restriction, if there is one.
Does everyone understand what Jim's proposing?
Not exactly. Are you suggesting if there's more of that data similar to that somewhere else to provide this, where to find that? Or?
Well, no. I'll give you an example of my own database. It's a set of data that I've created myself. It's not in any particular... It's on an Excel sheet, but I mean, otherwise it's not in... what professionals consider a database. Okay, it's just information on an Excel sheet. And I will take conclusions from that. I will make calculations. I will put something online that shows you things. But I cannot have somebody go over that database with me because it's very proprietary. Okay, and I have access to some information for other purposes, and I can't use that information except for those other purposes. Mm-hmm. And therefore, when I put data on, which I haven't done yet, I have to say that if you need more information, if you're looking for more information from this and my conclusion, you can ask me and I will tell you whether I can give it to you, but I don't, you know, I'd have to have a question. Mm-hmm. Something like that. So that's a little more complicated than I think. Say, you know, ask the poster if they can give you more information.
It sounds to me like it's almost that thing we talked about in terms of at what scale does the data suddenly need to be blurred or fuzzed, right? So we say, well, actually, and we talked about this in relation to some of that Esri business analyst data where some neighborhoods are self-defined or so small that it really distorted the data, and it may make more sense, you know, to sort of just not, you know, have certain ones that say this is just too small, right? And it would be helpful to know, yeah, for any given layer of data, here's as low as it goes, and if maybe even then here's why, you know? I mean, I guess to Kari's point about when it relates to health data, it may be because it's issues of confidentiality or, you know, whatever. But it does seem like something that's about, because that click doesn't have to be the same for every layer. You know, it could be different for each layer depending on the sensitivity of the data.
And it strikes me that you're also actually clarifying the self-interest of the community as for anonymity and privacy and the like, and at the same time making clear who the gatekeeper is, what are the rules around the gate that were agreed on when the data was gathered in the first place, so that the stuff is really useful and you the go-to, you know, just where is the source? You know, Dale keeps going, where's the source? You know, with building problems. Well, you know, what's the source regulation? What's the source document that generated this? And so, sounds like a good idea.
Very, very specific. If you ask me how old John and Mary are, I'm not going to tell you. I can tell you what the age range in the community is. And you can go and get something from the superintendent of elections that will show you how old John and Mary are, but I'm not going to tell you. Because that's something that I put in there without their consent. So that's a simple one. I can think of lots of other ones, but...
I think the data owners, before we hand data over, if it's something the public shouldn't be seeing, we're not going to get it in the first place. And I think if people wanted for more information, they can just look at the source and call that contact number. Yeah. I mean, I think that would probably
suffice.
Yeah, I think you'd be opening yourself up for way more calls and conversations than you would want if you put on there to contact you if they need more information, because...
Well, that you have to... You can also say there's no... You can't go any further if you don't want to be bothered. You just say there's no further access to the data than you're looking at.
I think a person, if, you know, a college student's looking to get data for a project, and like, oh, I wonder if they have any more of that, they're going to see that contact number, call up whoever the owner is and be like, do you have anything, you know, more with this? That's what I think.
I'm just noting that it's understood that each layer of data will differ depending on anonymity, accuracy, availability, and specificity. Just keep that in mind moving forward.
So we'll put those annotations into that, or those annotations, which are different from the other annotations, into the spreadsheet that's on the Weebly doc. Should there be an extra column for that, like limitations of data? Does that make sense?
You could end up... I mean, if you start getting to what GIS people know as metadata, I mean, if you break it down so far, I mean, the average person doesn't care about it. I mean, I guess...
Whatever you put out there is what is allowed to be out there.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, I'd say if you want to keep a description relatively short, and, you know, if there is how the data was collected, what the accuracy of it is, stuff like that.
Again, obviously... all wrapped around the principles of trying to get as small as possible, notwithstanding the thing we just discussed. But the principle is zooming in.
Well, I think what Jim was speaking to, it's both small as possible, but then if it's a resident-centric, you know, platform, then it's always keeping in mind how would neighbors feel.
That's right.
Right, so if it feels, whether it's a confidentiality issue or just sort of a that's feeling intrusive, then keeping that in mind.
Well, that just goes back to the, you know, the basic idea that this is a neighborhood center, not a resident center. Mm-hmm. You know, so once you zoom into the neighborhood, you know, and want to go further, you can't go further. There's nothing there, nothing else to see.
Yeah, well, there may be some layers where it's okay to go even more.
Like the assets.
Point data, right.
Yeah, point.
So it's never going to be bigger than neighborhood, but there might be layers that it would be okay for it to be smaller. But in some cases that could feel...
Yeah, even the assets might be invading privacy. Like so-and-so has a fruit tree in their backyard. Mm-hmm. That's something somebody brought up.
You start bringing people into it. You know,
well, if that's the example you gave, that's because that neighborhood chose to have that be a part of the data they contributed. That's a different thing. As a, you know, because there isn't an inventory of fruit trees.
No.
So in that case, that neighborhood could have agreed that, you know,
we'll have such and such number of fruit trees in our neighborhood available to anybody, if you want to see the exact location of those fruit trees, you can't.
Well, we kind of discussed a few weeks ago, okay, so when we get to the point where the public is uploading
contributing data,
you know, their assets they think are cool in their neighborhood, you know, we talked about who's going to be saying, oh, we can't put this one up here. You know, because like, say a homeowner is a
manager.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, say a homeowner does have a big mango tree, and like, I've got, you know, say we've got all these mangoes we can never use. We don't care if people come and grab them.
Yeah,
you know.
But you know what? If you invite someone onto your property
and they get hurt,
they will sue you responsible. That happened to a friend, my aunt's, and yeah, the man actually electrocuted himself using a pole to get off fruit, and they sued her.
Wow.
And
We don't want to get into making decisions for people.
Right.
We want that's the whole role that this community, this neighborhood, whatever we call it, the neighborhood data manager would play, is to hang out with you and find out who's going to get sued. But really to pay attention to what's going on in that neighborhood. But we don't want to get it at that scale. That's the neighborhood's.
Right.
That's how we scale down to that decision making tree.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think, it doesn't seem like we're quite at the point where we're going to be picking neighborhood managers for each neighborhood yet, but we'll definitely be getting there soon, hopefully.
There is already an existing website where you can go to say that you have to share.
Is there? So that is a data set that could be contributed to the platform.
It's a partnership, yeah.
All right. I'll have to think about bringing them to this table next time.
I wonder if you could put a waiver on there. You can't hold the property owner responsible for anything if they put, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a bridge for us.
All right, so the Weebly website, I don't know if anybody else has been playing around with it, but I've added a couple of things to the website. For example, a calendar to the homepage, so people who are just happen to be passing through and check out our website can know when our next meeting is. But again, I think most of us have the capacity to edit the website as needed. So that's the intention for the time being until the platform's up and running, for us to utilize that website as much as possible. And all of our documents are going to be on there, all right?
And I think I put an extra page that's for the collaboration resources, just so you contribute a couple, and then there's one that was more about like communities of practice that seems like it's probably relevant to us as well. So,
and we should probably add the links that Tim shared
I put those on the.
You put them on there?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So upload links as wanted and needed. While we're talking about technologies, I was going to suggest that we perhaps create a Yahoo group list for this listserv, because sometimes people are getting left off of the email chains. And actually, I don't know how many of you have used like Yahoo groups before, but it creates an archive of all of the emails that have ever been sent to that group. So you could go on, for somebody who's new to the group or the collaborative, you could go on and read, you know, what emails have happened in the past. And for those of you who maybe don't want to be getting 60 emails in your inbox in one day, you could condense them into like a daily digest from the collaborative too, so your inbox aren't getting flooded. I don't know if some of you are concerned about that, but my inbox gets a little crazy, so.
We use Basecamp, which is a web-based project management platform, and it does the same thing. It keeps an archive of the messages and threads all in one place, but there's also a calendar, and you can place to track to-do lists. You can upload documents and create these whiteboards, which are these free-form writing spaces.
So that's another tool.
And we have, we have a sufficient, a big enough account that we could add this as a project, if that would be a better alternative than the Yahoo.
Yeah, what does everyone think about that?
How do you get access? Is it just web-based?
It's web-based. I would need everybody's contact information so that I could upload it, and then you receive an email invitation, and you just click on it and create a password, and then you have access to the whole.
Depends if it's send out an email to the whole list, right?
Yeah, or just a few people on the list, but it still captures the conversation.
Depends if we're blocked.
I think we have county people other projects.
Mm-hmm. I've used it before. It's actually really user friendly.
So do we
want to
put it to a vote? Who's comfortable with having Kari create that for us and upload all of the email addresses into that? Once you have created that, would we all have access to add people, or is that your...
No, role? I can give people access to that.
But There are some hands that were going back and forth.
But the way you were going to do it, where the way you were going to do it more open, whereas this way she's got to give the access.
Someone has to be in charge of the audience.
Someone's like the manager either way. But with yours, if someone requests to be added to the list, they can be added, no problem, right? Yeah. Okay. So all in favor of doing that?
Discussion.
Yeah, discussion first.
I know. Kathy knows how I am. What if you no longer are part of the group for whatever reason? What happens then?
You get expelled.
No, what I'm saying is for some reason you moved to Michigan and you're not going to be part of this group anymore.
How do you request to be removed?
The account is owned by the health department. So if something happens to the health department, which I think is a bigger issue. but...
So is the health department going to, would the health department allow Scope to be a contributor on that so that if for some reason you personally couldn't do it, would you give it to someone else to do from the health department? And we've always got that link or?
Multiple people have editing access?
Yes. We have, through this account, we have a number of different projects. So when you log in, you'll only see data or the information related to this specific project. But somebody at the health department, because of our role in all of these different community projects, is always going to have access to that account to, you know, make sure we pay bills. There's a monthly fee attached to it, but that's part of the coverage.
Okay, so even if you won $1 million and decided to move to Europe, somebody else would take over and we would continue to use.
Yes, and I would wish you luck. Yes. Better
buy a ticket.
If you win tonight, you can buy it.
All right, is there any more discussion before we put it to a vote? All right, so all in favor, raise your hand. Okay. I think that's most people.
I have an afterthought, doesn't really relate to the motion, about adding people. LinkedIn has a pretty good principle, and that is that they suggest you don't connect with anybody that you don't know. You're charged to do a little research to figure out whether you do know them or not. But I think that's a pretty good principle. So if somebody asks if they can be added to a list, we just want to make sure that it's somebody that's part of
no
the system and
the
playing
list.
The right kind of game, rather than somebody from Las Vegas, pardon the pun, you know. But some people are manipulative, and I don't think it takes too much to check. Because you raise the question, you know, or you raise the question whether or not you just add somebody. I think we should be able to, providing somebody, probably Scope, does the check on adding them in.
Yeah. Okay. I think as the facilitator of the collaborative, Scope could provide that.
You just
and everyone else is comfortable with it. Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Carly. All right, here's the website. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, that's our address. Okay, moving along. This was...
What was it? SC Community Data?
Oh, yeah.
Collaborative.
SC Community Data Collaborative. Weebly.com.
Thank you.
Okay, so as in the data sets and data stewards domain, there was this topic that was brought up at the before the last meeting about our census block group numbers and demographic totals comparable to the neighborhood demographic totals. And so Trevor's done quite a bit of work actually creating these maps. That are posted around. so we could at least see it visually. I don't know, we don't have the spreadsheets to be able to look.
I sent them out right before I left my office.
This morning?
Oh, this morning.
Have email access.
Okay, so well, everybody can check those out.
Well, I think I just sent it to you and Allison.
Okay, well, we can post those to the website so people can take a look. But
did you eyeball
the spreadsheets?
Yeah.
What's your sense? Michael's not here actually, and this is sort of his question, so maybe we should table this discussion until he's here next time.
I mean, to compare the census blocks population with the neighborhood's population. I mean, other than just comparing them visually on the map, do you guys have an idea of another way to do that? Or is it just going to be a visual looking at the spreadsheets, getting a general idea of the numbers? Or because, I mean, you're trying to compare two different sized polygons.
It's
don't
vary.
Line up and overlap. Yeah, apples to oranges, kind of. So.
So I think that the concern that's constantly been expressed is if we begin displaying data by neighborhood, it's going to be such a small geography. There'll be so few people living in that geography that it would be either risking confidentiality or distorting the data. And so. I know, at least in my conversations with Michael, that has constantly been a thing. Like, it has been the sense that there would be a lot of neighborhoods that are significantly smaller than the size of a census block group.
I see Vicky wanting to say something.
Yes, but the county has, in the planning department, planning areas, if I'm not mistaken, that are made up of different areas, that are larger geographic areas, mm-hmm. that we've been... Our hope for a long time has been to use those planning areas to track student demographics, people moving in and out, so we can plan better for the future. Because some of your older neighborhoods, the kids grow up, but the parents still live there. In some cases, the parents sell the house and a new family moves in. It's by planning areas, larger areas. I think they already have those areas set up.
So are those larger than a neighborhood but yes. smaller than a census block, or are they larger than a census
Probably
block?
Probably a combo.
It's a little combo.
Oh, combination.
Yeah, census block. Yeah. They're much larger than a census block.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, our principle was to get down to the neighborhood scale or smaller when possible, but down to the neighborhood scale. So Michael's concern was that there would be preponderance of neighborhoods that were too small for him to feel comfortable that the data was not a violation of principle around confidentiality. I think the idea of looking at the spreadsheet, part of it's so much from the maps, but in this case, the spreadsheets might be able to say 80% of the neighborhoods are at roughly the same population as a block group. Now, having not seen them yet, we don't know whether that's 10% or 80%.
They're on the wall, aren't they? Are they one of these?
What defines the neighborhood? What if you have a lot that's not part of a Rosedale subdivision?
No, there's a lot of areas that are not part
of
the
neighborhood. Neighborhoods are self-identified.
In some instances.
But Mickey, that's what we've been working with, is the idea that it's about neighborhoods that are as much as possible defined by residents who live in that place. And so we had discussions a few times back about, so well, what about all that area on that map, for instance, that's still the white space that doesn't have any designated neighborhood? And the discussion was, at this stage, if it's about creating a resident-centric, neighborhood-centric platform, then that's okay. Because it's really about creating resources for residents to use primarily. Not that the school district and the health department and everybody else can't also find it useful, but it's primarily for residents. And in that's why neighborhood boundaries are so important. And mm-hmm. neighborhood boundaries are often defined in relation to, you know, the six-lane highways that kids can't cross.
Natural boundaries.
Right. Exactly. Right. Natural. And even though, like, in Northport, my understanding of it is that you all worked to take all of that into account as much as possible in creating the different neighborhoods. In some places, we kind of live into boundaries, like in Central Coconut, we live into boundaries that felt like, okay, yeah, this kind of fits. But there's a reason for it being specific to neighborhood as opposed to other
area.
Exactly. And in the future, you can start calling it instead of scope neighborhoods, because they're actually the collaborative neighborhoods, right? Or they're the, so I think that's just another little example, and we keep referring to it as a scope thing, that people think of this as a scope project, as opposed to recognizing we're all.
Do we want to come up with an official name?
For the neighborhood?
Like, right?
Yeah.
Because I haven't heard of that. I'm just trying to distinguish them from
the county.
Some other.
Right. When you're, and I know when you're working on a project, you have to name it something so you know what it is.
Exactly. And you had that issue too, right?
Yes. Yeah, I did. Because I didn't know what it was. Plus, I named it what I got.
Yeah. I mean, community
data collaborative.
Can we just call them community data collaborative neighborhoods? Okay.
Short and sweet.
Yeah.
The problem is. The problem with the initials is that then it looks like CDC.
So on the data website, are people selecting neighborhoods? Is that the
right
idea?
That's how you get into the.
Are they zooming into a map?
They get to everything through their neighborhood.
Yeah, so the homepage, this is actually the exit of the show, and we can look at it. The homepage is a, if you start from our website and go to the online data platform and click on the community platform. Oh, you can't see anything?
That was the big apple, that's what that was.
Decided not to talk to my computer anymore.
My point with that was that the block groups will have data for all of the county, but the neighborhoods, if we, you know, if you go in and select your neighborhood and then find your data, you know, there's so much of the county that isn't defined by neighborhood and yet we'll have the data for. Are we missing out by not taking the block group
approach? So we've had this discussion now a few times, and there was, for a while it was, okay, why don't we put both of them in the platform? So anybody who wants to look at it by block group and neighborhood could do that. If we're creating a resident-centric or neighborhood-centric platform, though, does it really make sense to have all of some of these block groups up there first thing when you open up the platform? Since that's not how residents think of their space.
I think it works the other way around. In other words, you have, if you saw this map here behind me, what you really want is the neighborhoods to go on top of it, in effect, to show you that everybody doesn't live here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you're seeing a comparison for your area versus other areas in the county. If it's restricted just to the neighborhood, and you're just presenting the neighborhood, you don't know how you compare, and then, you know, the data has less meaning.
You may know how you may compare to other self-identified neighborhoods, but the whole rest of the county, you wouldn't know.
It also strikes me that there's other kinds of neighborhoods, that a house lives in a watershed, you know, the water atlas and stuff like that.
Yeah,
help
so
unite communities in ways that the neighborhood boundary may not, and the same thing with, let's say, private, you know, walk score and proximity to local businesses and stuff like that. It's another community building asset. And it strikes me that the more ways you can search this database, the more useful you make it to multiple partners, the more likely you are to have people invest in it. Well, especially if you maintain the integrity that it's to be available at the community level.
The, you know, that all those different layers, John, I think are critically important to be available for people to see themselves in, like a water district or whatever, and that's part of what the intention was. But remember that this, the idea here is to think in terms of how is it that people live their lives initially first, you know, it's in relationship to people, to the people close to them and the space close to them. So that's the rationale for the resident-centric approach, thinking in terms of neighborhoods first. I do think that Jim, I sort of thought he described it well in terms of that map with the neighborhoods on top of it. So that your first look at it is, I'm in this neighborhood. I mean, people don't say, I'm in block group 12.321. And that's not how you live life. You live life because everybody around the table this morning talked about, I'm from Southgate. By the way, a lot of people from Southgate. So you see Southgate first. And then, if you aren't living in one of those places, then you see yourself in some other place. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me the first place to look at is what I relate to as a neighborhood.
You know, Tim, Southgate's a perfect example because it's, you know, 5,000 residents. Mm-hmm. In one homeowners association that was developed in different stages in the late 50s, early 60s. That's real easy to define. Mm-hmm. But I actually study geography and have a degree in it, and I'm thinking about all the micro neighborhoods I know just surrounding me. Sure. Like, you know, by Bath and Racket, behind Trader Joe's, bordered by the Cadillac dealership on Bee Ridge, there's a pocket of poverty there for a few streets, and also an old rundown trailer park. There's two micro neighborhoods right there that don't relate to anything else. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how far are you going to break this down? Because there are a lot of little micro neighborhoods like that in Sarasota County.
And people said that this evolves over time.
Right.
So the system ultimately will have to be flexible enough that users, I mean, there are other communities where you can go on and you can draw the geography, and it'll automatically then not only populate the map, but give you the charts that say this is how many people are in this area, and these are all the different. You get to that point where it could be not only things that are, this is sort of like stage one of at least some that have been defined as, but I do think that the this resident or neighborhood-centric orientation is still very novel. It's not the norm. It's still sort of the edge of innovation. And my concern would just be if we devote a whole lot of time and energy at this stage to populating the platform with data that is organized by the more traditional geographies, it will become primarily a resource for professionals. And that residents and resident groups really coming into our own, their own, in relation to community data is less likely to happen. Because I would say there's still the fact that all of us who are professionals who've been using any kind of community data have a head start. So if this is about a philosophy that's equipping any of us as residents with data, then I think thinking about the staging of the inclusion of that data is important.
You know, I think it's a good point, but let's take the county GIS system, for example. Any resident can go on that website and go through the tutorial. So, but any resident that's not familiar with it can't go on and get information out of it. It's very confusing unless you go through the tutorial and have a little practice. And I think the same thing applies to what you're speaking to. That, sure, a professional can jump in and immediately get data, but unless there's a tutorial, like there is on the county site, the average resident in that community won't have access.
Well, that's part of what obviously we'll have to take into account as we move forward. And some of these websites that Allison was talking about where you design your own space, pretty intuitive. And man, they populate fast with what the data shows for those self-defined neighborhoods.
What would be an example of one of those sites?
Well, the Miami Trust is one of them. Yeah, that's what we saw.
Maybe send them out to the whole group so we can all take a look.
Well, that's one of the main functionalities in business analyst community.
Right.
Is, you know, you define your boundary and then pull out the information on that.
So that's a application. I don't know about a specific up and running one, but that's a platform that works that way. Yeah. Another thing I didn't know, a couple of meetings ago, you know, when you look at the map and see the gaps where there aren't neighborhoods, didn't we kind of discuss that maybe that would get people motivated, like, hey, my neighborhood's not on here, I want to get them on here, and then, you know, it encourages more, you know, participation. I think that would be good. Eventually, we will, you know, fill in those gaps.
That's the hope.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of this white space, especially like out here, mm-hmm. is all parkland too, where mm-hmm. you know, we're not, nobody really lives out there except for, you know, maybe some state park workers or something. So.
Are we really looking at sort of a temporal thing where the older cities were built around what we know now as neighborhoods, usually based on who developed them, Gillespie Park, things like that. And then you come to the 1980s and 90s, they're gated subdivisions. So we've got, you know, these creative things. We're really talking about that hard middle where people actually moved there and maybe didn't even think about identifying with a neighborhood per se. Yeah. But now, you know, we're talking about sort of a new overlay or something like that. Maybe this isn't a discussion to have amongst ourselves, but really to get to somebody from Kona and talk to them about where that evolution of those interstitial from 1950 to 1984 or whatever, you know, exactly how they approach them, if they've got a stake in sort of organizing the neighborhood and getting them to join. So maybe this is something that we need a little bit more feedback on from the people who we're actually talking about to see how they want to identify. When I worked at the county, there were a lot of people who did not want to identify with the neighborhood because it meant that they weren't in this rural, you know, 2-acre parcel they bought into. But now they're starting to have those real world problems of flow that tend to bring people to the table around a neighborhood type of structure. So I just want to throw that out there so that we don't find ourselves through the buzzsaw of neighborhoods that aren't really neighborhoods coming to us and really pushing back on how we're defining a neighborhood. That's just an observation.
I think this is part of what you're talking about.
Okay.
That we have to keep in mind how early on we are in this mm-hmm. whole project. Because I can foresee as we develop neighborhood data mm-hmm. and we start to include things like you just mentioned, this trailer park here, that poverty section here, the trailer park could be very affluent, as a matter of fact, I'm not saying it is, that we'll be able to see things and we'll know something's wrong. Because this map doesn't show what I know to be the case. And so that will identify something that we have to go look at and redraw some lines, and all of a sudden, you'll see an entirely different picture that you were looking for the past 5 years. Well, we're not there yet. But I think that's where we're going. And we will be developing a tool that is going to be just superb for all kinds of things, including finding poverty pockets and finding distressed neighborhoods that we didn't know existed. But we can't tell that yet. We will get there. And that to me is what's so exciting about a lot of this. It's a working process. It's very good.
I think the point, just go back to that for a second, was really great about engaging neighborhood organizations, neighbors, in this discussion to see not only what they would identify with, but how they might use it. Would it be useful at all? What would it be useful for? Mm-hmm. You know, our thinking about how it is displayed could be totally off the mark. We may be overcomplicating this. They may want a platform that, you know, is mostly what they put into it rather than what we put into it. So I think getting some feedback from the residents would be really useful. Maybe like a focus group study or something.
Hmm. So you're not necessarily advocating for bringing Kona members to the data collaborative meetings. You're thinking like we take this to them, sort of thing.
Like identify 2 or 3 thought leaders. Just, you know, ask them when they go out and try and organize these areas, what are they hearing?
It's always going to be, you're going to get more honest feedback if you sort of present it in their setting. I think if somebody comes to the meeting, they're going to want to tell you what you want to hear, more likely. So right. The more honest feedback is, you know, could be members of this group going out and...
You won't have trouble getting honest feedback at a common meeting.
So what does everyone think of that?
It's a good idea.
I think that's a good
what
idea.
What is this acronym, CONA?
CONA is the Council of Neighborhood Associations. And there's another one in South County.
Good idea.
You know, as this thing develops, it's going to be very, very valuable to the business community.
Right.
Because, you know, they usually pay a lot of money for this data. And it's going to be a real economic shot in the arm for a lot of businesses to be able to have this data so they can target their markets.
I think it'd be great because businesses are part of the neighborhoods. And
right.
To get more, more of the business information in there, too, would be great.
And then, of course, all the social justice issues become really pronounced. For instance, those of us who live in neighborhoods that are in the process of being gentrified, what are the implications? So what's the role of a collaborative such as this in speaking to the importance of paying attention to the dynamics of social justice as well?
All the poor people just moved to Manatee County.
It's just a matter of time before somebody is bold enough to make such a statement.
Oh, they have. Dale's not the first.
Well, so perhaps this is a topic that we should explore in our next meetings, is how to bring this discussion to people instead of bringing them to this meet or collaborative meetings.
Or you might, maybe between now and the January meeting, you could organize a separate meeting just to address this topic for a smaller group of folks that might be interested. So there's some momentum on this really focused piece. Because I don't think we want to delay that too much. I think going out and getting some input will be an important barometer for determining how we move forward with this.
Is that part of the contract that SCOPE has with the county for the upcoming fiscal year?
That may be a question for John, who is not here.
I'm a little fuzzy on what it is that the topic is.
I think it's showing neighborhood representatives kind of where we're at with this and getting their feedback on, how it's played what else they would want from this. I mean, I think that's truly resident-centric, is getting as many opinions from residents about, how this is developing.
And politically, it might be savvy to go to them and say, we need your help.
Yeah.
Because then when they give us some of those answers, it starts to form that relationship.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're making a lot of decisions in this room about how it should be displayed, what data we should collect. Uh-huh. But maybe, we're off the mark. And I'm not saying that we are, I just think it's always good to check.
There's
always room for improvement in the area. I don't want to say a whole lot once you guys are off track again, but you can always, there's multiple methods, multiple ways. You can be talking to neighborhood representatives that don't represent a lot of the neighborhood. Anyway, it goes on and on and on, so I think I agree with you that it's always helpful to keep pushing for better accuracy according to the residents.
Isn't this, though, a part of the data 2.0 that you did last year and the data 2.1 that you're going to do this next year?
Yeah, so that's getting to Allison's question, is one of the pieces that SCOPE is providing to the Data Collaborative is these data 2.1 workshops. Those are still very much in the development stages, so this could be something that's part of those workshops.
Can you talk more about those?
I cannot.
I still think that the CONA idea needs to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
To talk with them about this. if for no other reason, to make them aware of what's going on, rather than we march, you know, 2,000 miles down this road and then say, oh, look what we've done, and then get their feedback after the fact.
Mm-hmm. And I think the scope, you know, whether or not it's part of the scope contract is really irrelevant to most of the people here. It just seems like the right thing to do at this point.
Yeah, the energy's here, so let's... All right, well, there's some very, like, Bruce Dillon is one of the smartest people I know on the planet. He lives in Thomas. And
he's from Friends of Searchland Parks.
Yeah. And John, his name escapes me, he's a real estate agent. So he knows the broader area. He's got a.
John Ask.
John Ask. He's also very forthright.
And also, Colleen, you know, there are already established groups. I know through CHIP we have our community health action teams. This data could be presented, and not necessarily by you, but if we just, you know, kind of. As create a package that we could all go out and deliver, you know, think about those existing mechanisms like CONA that are already in place where it would just be easy to sort of present and get some standardized and feedback in some sort of standardized way.
So let, in the interest of, you know, this meeting, which is already open, do we want to get together as a group, those who are interested in being part of this process, before the next meeting and set a date for that? Is it easier to do that here right now or in over email?
Well, there's probably some people that aren't here that might be interested in it, so I would put it out through email.
Okay.
Well, so this is the meeting bringing in the CONA? The meeting about going to them.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The meeting
about
trying to plan the approach.
Yeah.
So I was thinking it was an actual meeting. I don't think before the holidays.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
All right. So I'll put out something in email, propose a couple of dates for that session, and then we can determine the agenda from there. All right. Any other discussion? Okay. Well, we're running short on time, but and Tim just stepped out. But we had on the agenda a report back from the Community Indicators Consortium conference that Allison and Tim were at earlier this month.
Okay. So, you do it. Jim, what's the name of the? You know, the 20 slides in 5 minutes, right? Let's do it super quick. So this was a conference of the Community Indicators Consortium, and there were mostly folks from the United States, although there were people from a variety of countries, so it was considered an international conference. But most of the primary plenary speakers were from major departments at the federal scale, I would say. So, like the Chief Technology Officer of Health and Human Services, and Bob Groves, who just stepped down as the head of the U.S. Census, and I'm forgetting the names of the other people, but the kinds of themes that came up were really this acknowledgement that we are in sort of a brave new world with regard to data. And now there's this talk about a data ecosystem. So not only is there the designed or designer data, which is how people were talking about the census data, but also what's being referred to as organic data. So that's mostly behavioral. It's not very much about internal states. It's the kind of stuff that is generated like through social media, you know, through Facebook, and all the data that now exists in the world. And so they talked a lot about the Wild West of data mining and the fact that it's completely different than it was before. There was talk about the importance of as many folks as possible who see value in the American Community Survey to speak out about that because it's still at great risk and there's a concern that it will just die quietly in the middle of the night when some, you know, in some congressional meeting. So I don't know if you all saw that. I think actually, Jim, you may have sent out a link to an article about that a few months back. It sort of it was really hot there for a little bit, but now it seems like it's cooled off. But in fact, it's just as present as a risk. There was talk about Big data, small data, open data. So big data is this, you know, really these huge, large, complex data sets, difficult to manage with, you know, your desktop or relational databases. There was a lot of talk about open data in terms of liberating data. So there's actually now, you know, just like there's Teach for America, there's Code for America. And Code for America are people who've recently gotten their degrees in you know, the kind of data, IT kinds of stuff that are joining up with communities around the country to liberate data. And then small data, so that's really what we're talking about in terms of neighborhood scale data. I guess, you know, there was stuff on sustainability, there's a track on health, on education, and then on both the approaches and the tools for impact. So there's a lot more discussion now. What I was hearing, because I haven't been to this conference before, you've been a number of years ago, right?
No, I've just gone for a time.
Okay. But it seemed like what one of the common themes was look, we're beyond making a case now for the importance of community data. And we're beyond getting the data together, although there's still a lot of work to be done on that. We really have to be in the realm of using data for decision making for change. So it was much more emphasizing active use of data. Yeah, I sent those quotes. I mean, obviously, the ones that I sent you, those were the ones that struck us. We wrote an editorial. We'll see if it gets published. If not, we'll stick it on. You know, we just send you guys a link to it and put it posted on, you know, the website or whatever. But and that idea of innovation and challenging the status quo, a lot of stuff on equity, a lot of stuff on equality, and the use of data for the sake of affecting community change that addresses issues of equity and equality.
The only thing I would add is that there was a really interesting discussion about HUD using the Postal Service to pay attention to foreclosures and stuff like that. So they're linking relationships between organizations at the scale, at a meta scale. These guys usually don't talk to each other, but they're starting to do that more. The problem with it, and everybody in the room knows this is a problem, is that it just doesn't squeeze down to sufficient scale. And when asked, the guy from HUD said, absolutely, but we just couldn't negotiate that. So with the Postal Service. So there is an acknowledgement that these data bases are really important to get the scale. It just isn't there yet. But that the decisions that need to be made based upon data at the scale that makes them most useful. It just, just like we're having this discussion, that's happening at the federal scale too, around issues of scale.
So some of the stuff is available online, and I think we already sent out the CIC Summit link, but you know, I think I checked it recently and it's not up yet, but hopefully soon I'll have at least a set of the sessions that you can, you know, that were streamed or that were recorded, so.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you guys have the opportunity to go to that and tap into the national conversation.
And just a quick comment about that. So last night, the Florida, you know, the local chapter of the Green Building Council partnered with realtors and hosted a wonderful discussion at the local realtors place. The main speaker, basically, she was talking about appraisals for green buildings, but she was talking about data. Yeah. When it came down to it, it was all about data, and that nobody's opinion about this, that, or the other thing really mattered to an appraiser. They had to have data, and if they had the data, then they were required to actually add that value to the building. Yeah. And it was all about equity, affordability, and performance across the board. So the, you know, all of the stuff that you know, sort of started convening this conversation is actually percolating up at all kinds of levels. And it was interesting that because the data doesn't exist about the home and therefore the listing or or its performance, then there were no lenders in the room. Mm-hmm. plus there's no money. The data creates the opportunity for a transaction to occur, and without it, there's, you know, in the future we get the U.S., regardless of all the fun stuff we might consider, it's the one we choose to buy. And we're not going to buy it unless the data is there supporting that it's a better deal than the one we're already buying. So data is fundamental to all of this. And I was curious, you mentioned the organic data, and you know, the what to me is emergent is the complex adaptive systems understanding of how things really work,
right,
versus the imposed hierarchies of decision and communication that aren't working so well,
right,
these days.
Right.
And so organic data is a lot more than that. You know, it's this proposition of organizing around stuff you care about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you care about real estate sales and the value of green buildings, you'll organize around that. If you care about social equity, you'll organize around that. And data platform is truly useful. This stuff will self-organize and create communities of interest that can interact with each other in a robust way.
Right, yeah. And to hear, you know, the rock stars in this field talk, like to hear Bob Groves speak as the former head of the U.S. Census, and he's very, you know, he's not at all got sort of this proprietary sense of the census data, and he sees the value of the intentional and very rigorous gathering of data through the census, but he appreciates the potential of these more emergent data sets and sees that there's a need to figure out how it all interrelates, and he used metaphors of ecosystems consistently. So, it was pretty impressive to hear people speaking about complex systems, and I mean, that's what I kept saying, is complexities being spoken in every single conversation. Not everybody necessarily knows about complex systems theory, but it was manifesting everywhere. And so, and yet it was more about what's really emerging, not just theoretically or hypothetically. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
You know what I keep thinking with your discussion? We have all these things we want to know specifically about the neighborhoods, this information, and you know, you just got to think with technology, maybe if our platform one day can get to the point where whatever neighborhood you're in, you get a electronic form, and we start collect. I mean, I don't know the legal. I'm sure you know there'd be a long process to work out to create such a form, but we start collecting that data, you know, from the users of the platform, and then we get all this really high quality data for our neighborhoods, you know, and just keep building it over the years.
Well, you know, they, one of the things they talked about was public is access to data that's already there that was isn't currently available. Like all the stuff that's the power company becomes part of the mix. All the things that are actually databases that are part of how life works and how they become visible as a way for a neighbor to understand their own place.
And people in the energy field are already tapping into that for energy efficiency systems.
So this concept of citizen-generated data is, you know, it's just not yet visible to anybody.
You know, John was talking about that presentation last night. One of the problems the appraisers are having is they can't even get the realtors to fill in the MLS forms correctly and take the time to check the boxes that apply. So it's sort of like a garbage in, garbage out. And so to be accurate, you actually have to have somebody actually question the person about the data so the boxes get filled in correctly. Otherwise, you end up with a bunch of useless data.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you need to get somebody trying to influence the way their neighborhoods view, you know, and yeah, that has to be something to take into account. Yeah,
you know, soon this stuff's going to be, you know, right now, in order to understand whether there's a social justice problem in a specific neighborhood, you have to choose to engage around that, the collection, and it's not easy to get to. I think soon there's going to be this data that is generated based upon the information that's already going on. You know, what kinds of exchanges are occurring on a real-time basis between cops and neighbors and what's really happening, and that's going to, this is these big data sets that are going to get managed in a way that what's happening becomes visible.
Yeah.
This is so
a really important conversation, I think.
But the fact that we're already 25 minutes over.
It will continue to happen at further collaborative meetings and out and about and blogging and all that good stuff. So thanks, guys, for bringing that up. This was just sort of a heads up, Data 2.1 workshops in 2013. Those of you who are familiar with Data 2.0 know that last year they were set, these workshops were focused on getting the word out about the Community Data Collaborative, among other things, and to different municipalities and in different demographic hotspots. So we'll see what the iteration looks like for next year. Reflection for decision making. We probably don't have the time to go over Jim Bennett's form in detail, but Allison had sent out her suggested edits. That,
the only thing we've gotten is from Allison. And anybody else had anything to throw in? Because if we don't get any more, I think then we just work in the changes and we're done. But I think everybody ought to look at it once more.
Okay. At the next meeting, perhaps. All right. And I was going to ask Nita to do a little report back from the Southwest Regional GIS Day, since she's one of the main organizers of that.
Okay, very quickly. This year, we decided to invite our neighbors from Manatee County, Sarasota County, we tried DeSoto County, Charlotte County, and the municipalities in Sarasota County to do a regional GIS day to show the theme for this year was interconnectivity. And so what we wanted to do was we wanted to show people how, as government entities and other related entities, because SCOPE was part of it, and the David Collaborative was part of it, but how we interconnect data to work together. So we had about 100 people there. We had it at our Morgan Community Center down in Northport. And next year, Sarasota County has agreed to sponsor the next one. So maybe we'll get something going and hopefully do regional GIS days rather than everybody doing their own. It seems to...
So Nita, when you say you had 100 people there, can you... what would be a profile of 100 people?
All walks of life.
We had all ages.
We had some older people there. We had
John and Jane Q. Public kind of people.
Yep. Yeah. We had middle school kids, high schoolers, because the center is where all the high school and middle school kids go.
Right.
We had those kids there, and we conned them into coming in, and then they got interested. We told them there was lemonade
and
popcorn,
right.
They came in, and they enjoyed the geocaching and some of the other things. This one here, the picture that she's got there, we put a very large aerial and allowed people to put where they live, work, learn, and play with different colored stars. And if you want that, I can give it to you.
Well, I want to see it at the Venice Community Center the next time.
Venice didn't choose to participate.
The space is there. And it was such a great setup. I could have spent all day, but I had another meeting to go to.
Right.
And I overheard Brad saying that he wants to get the all the regional GIS folks together regularly to have sort of like a regional data collaborative as well.
Well, we're doing that here.
Yeah.
And the region that you were considering was Charlotte, DeSoto, Manatee, and Sarasota?
The region that were at the GIS day was Charlotte, Sarasota, Manatee.
Okay. And DeSoto was invited.
DeSoto was invited, but they didn't choose to do it this year. But they may do it next year.
It was a fun time. Yeah. We had a lot of interest. All right. So winding things down, we'll be focusing on the platform on January 16th then. And someone who is checking out our website offered to design a new data collaborative logo. I don't know if this is a highest priority for us right now, but if folks are interested in that opportunity, It's available. All right.
Is it somebody from Sarasota County who lives in the county?
Yes. Any other announcements before we?
I have something I'd like everybody to contemplate. You may have seen online the pictures of the New Jersey Shore damage. What they do is that you have an area like a Google map of the way it was, and then you slide across the screen and it shows you what happened. And it's really awesome because you can actually, it makes it like you're watching it happen, even though you're not. It's just the way the line works. And you can see the possibilities of this kind of juxtaposition of photographic data to indicate why a particular building didn't go, why it's still there, maybe because of the way it was set as well as because of the way it was built. So you can see things like this going on right now that may have great utility for use of visual data like these things. I don't know how many of you have been to the Denver Museum of, I think it's called Museum of Science and something else, it's in downtown Denver. They have a globe. And one of the things that you first see when you go in a globe, it's a big globe and it's all lit up, is you see a picture of what Jupiter is like with a red spot, and it tracks photographs of Jupiter from the observer satellites that go around. And you're watching Jupiter right in front of your face, and watching the atmosphere go around. It's made up of four video cameras, video projectors inside the globe. But what is truly astounding, because you've all seen maps of how the Earth formed and what it looked like in the Pleistocene period and so on and so forth, and one there was one continent and one there were several pieces, somebody got all that data together. And one of the shows is you look at the globe and it's all water. And then you see the first landmass and you watch it move over the hundreds of thousands to millions of years, and it comes out just the way it is now. I mean, it is truly mind-blowing. That's what we're on the edge of.
How do you get to that Sandy website? That sounds very interesting.
Pardon?
The previous website you mentioned.
The one with the shore, I can send that to you. I have to find it. It was sent by a relative. You got to see this. And I don't think we've deleted it, so I'll send that.
Send
it out. Yeah, and you can circulate it.
That'd be great. Thank you.
That's amazing.
We're working on an updated neighborhood profile for Central Coconut, so hopefully by January completed.
Awesome. That'll be one of the first real updated neighborhood profiles coming in the week. If anyone didn't sign this,